That's the trick cyclist we passed on the way in. We thought it was an errand boy.
That's Captain Errand Boy to you, Second Lieutenant. And unless you're dressed for a masquerade,
I fully expect to be saluted.
And welcome back to another episode of the Indiana Jones Universe, a podcast in which we learn more about the character of Indiana Jones, exploring other content in the Indiana Jones Universe. As always, I'm Will.
And I'm Max.
And thanks for joining us for episode number 38, in which today we're going to be talking about another episode of the Adventures of Young Indiana Jones television series with Chapter 13, Adventures in the Secret Service. This episode is as exciting as it sounds, and in this one, Indy continues working under French intelligence as he travels to Austria to escort the two princes of the Austrian royal family to meet with Emperor Karl to discuss a diplomatic peace agreement in hopes of ending the war a lot earlier. And in the second half, Indy then travels to Petrograd and works at the Balkan News Agency while he befriends a young group of Bolsheviks who take him to hear the historical figure Vladimir Lenin speak at a march. Towards the end of the episode, Indy then realizes that he's caught right in the middle of the Russian Revolution. So with lots of moving parts and a lot of history jam-packed in this episode, this is definitely an interesting one that takes a different spin on the topics of World War I and Indiana Jones for sure. We also have two references to two other movies in this episode, which is kind of cool. There are two quotes from Star Wars A New Hope that Frank Darabont, the writer, threw in there, so maybe you caught those. And also there are some references to the movie The Third Man by Orson Welles as well throughout the episode. So with that said, let's talk about Indy's adventures in the Secret Service.
Yes. Now, the last time I watched this episode was almost a year and a half ago. So to watch this episode again was really a very inspiring thing for me. I forgot this episode is really, really great, especially the scenery and the on-location stuff. I've got to say, out of the episodes we've reviewed so far, this has got to be the best. I mean, I say that with every episode, so that's kind of a little bit of a bias thing, but, you know, this just the scenes that this start off with and the scenes throughout the entire episode is so authentic and so real. I really feel like I'm in an indie adventure here.
Yeah, well, one thing I think you bring up a great point about this is one of the things I like about this episode so much is the style completely changes, and especially coming off of these last couple episodes, right? Like Trenches of Hell, Demons of Deception, Phantom Train of Doom, Oganga, Attack of the Hawkmen. Indy's actually physically fighting in World War I, where here, he's not really doing that anymore. And he travels to, like you said, all these like very great European cities, right? With very rich history. I mean, they went to Petrograd. I mean, we saw the city of St. Petersburg. They went there and shot, you know, at that city. So there's a lot going on. I mean, the bridges, you know, all these like huge buildings and just everything, I think, like you said, just gives it that very historical sort of feel. I mean, you do feel like this is 1917. And especially too, I like how the way this is shot. And we'll talk about some of these sort of, you know, little scenes in which you really get this like big epic feel, I think, which is kind of like what you're going for. Like every episode when you watch in this show, it feels like a whole new location that is as exciting as the last, but even a little bit better.
Yeah, now, I don't know if we've mentioned this before, but me and William have actually been to Austria and to Europe, and I wanted to mention something. I believe that me and William have actually seen some of the scenes from where this was filmed. Now, I don't believe it's the actual scene since there are a lot of matte paintings, but from what I have been able to gather, some of these scenes were actually shot in not only St. Petersburg, but also different parts of Austria, and I believe also a bit in the Czech Republic, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, there were a few. There's, of course, the great website we've talked about before, Young Indie Filming Locations. There were a few shots here that were filmed in Prague, and actually, I think, without even realizing it, we did actually stumble upon a few just, of course, minor scenes and places in Prague. But yeah, if you ever decide to go to any cities in Europe, make sure to check out that website, because, I mean, if you're really a fan of, like, locations and sets and that sort of stuff, you may just stumble upon a young indie location just kind of out of the blue. I mean, they're right in the heart of the city, especially with a lot of these episodes that take place right here. I mean, even in the next episode, there's a lot of stuff in Barcelona that we'll see as well. So yeah, totally. I mean, these are the real locations that we're talking about. And it starts off right with this first scene here that definitely gives you that same feel that we got at the beginning of Attack of the Hawkmen here with, you know, being at the French headquarters here. I mean, we see, you know, some artillery, and we see all sorts of soldiers moving around and a few trucks going around this kind of quad area. And we see Indy right off the bat walking in. And I like how, like you said, we have this very interesting sort of opening title here that has Adventures in the Secret Service and then this like typewriter font, which I thought was awesome.
Yes, I completely agree. That typewriter font, especially where you hear the typewriter typing Adventures of the Secret Service, is great. Now, something I wanted to mention, the title in this is actually very, very interesting. Now, we obviously see that, you know, Indy is in the French intelligence, but I don't really consider him to be in the secret service, you know? Like, he's in the service, but I don't consider it to be that secret.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. And, you know, you bring up a good point about these titles, which we've talked about before in some of, you know, kind of breaking these down and analyzing them. I know this might seem a little bit obvious maybe, but I've always enjoyed these titles because the titles of the episodes were originally just the location and the date, Austria 1917, Petrograd 1917. But when they were re-edited for, you know, these 22, you know, like 90-minute features, they all had brand new names. And we've talked about how some of them are really interesting and some of them kind of represent the themes of the episode. Like Demons of Deception is one that I think is really cool, with kind of the demons being sort of the Verdun section and Deception kind of being the Mata Hari thing at the end there. Whereas this is obviously a little bit more straightforward, Adventures in the Secret Service. But I do like how each title really doesn't give you a clue as to what's going on. It's very vague, but also very specific at the same time. And I like just kind of the feel of each one. Like you're always interested because of the title, right? And there's always some sort of little subtle, you know, remark or something that happens that relates to it. And going into this next section here, we see Indy go up, you know, this huge grand staircase, which I thought was kind of cool. And he's meeting with the second in command of French intelligence, and immediately he's like, excuse me? Because he's, you know, like, do I have some sort of new assignment or something? And one thing I found kind of interesting here is we see, of course, the same guy from the last episode, which I thought was cool in terms of continuity when re-editing these episodes. And we kind of have a reference to the last one, directly picking up off the last one with, you know, the whole Anthony Fokker story there and how that didn't end up working out, unfortunately. And so Indy gets assigned to what I would say is a pretty important mission, which is kind of ironic considering it's like, you failed Defense, and then he just gives him another important mission like it's no big deal. I mean, this is like a pretty serious part of history right here.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is a huge assignment. I mean, this could be the end to World War I. He's negotiating with Austria, which is, at this time is an ally to Germany. Now, if it's a peace treaty between Austria and French intelligence, which is all the allies to, you know, the United States, Europe, that could be a big, big turning point for this war, which, and like, considering Indy has failed at every other mission, it's kind of a surprise that Indy is just getting, you know, bombarded with more and more higher up missions. But I guess he does have faith in him that Indy is capable of greatness, I guess.
Right. I guess you could say that. Yeah. And what I found interesting here as well is you have this sort of idea of Indy again continuing to work through the French intelligence. And I like how you have two separate missions in each one of these episodes, because we had the same situation in Attack of the Hawkmen where Indy does two separate missions. Same thing here, where you have this first one with, you know, the Austrian princes and then the second one in Petrograd there. I did like that as well. And we see this next interesting shot on a bike. And I want to talk about this shot, which was very interesting. It transitions right. We see these cool trees. It seems to be what looks like maybe sort of snow or something as we see Indy biking down. And this huge car comes zooming through and honks right. And Indy just falls off the bike off the side of the road.
Right, which I love. It's kind of a hilarious scene. And he's like, what the hell? And then you know what he does? He gets back on the bike and catches right up with them. And he, you know, he's trying to catch up with them, but of course he gets stopped at every single point for his papers because, well, let's see, we're in the middle of a war here. That's what you do.
Right, exactly. And I love the part here where, you know, he's trying to catch up to them, gets to the room where he's supposed to get an assignment, and it's them. I mean, it's hilarious. Like, it had to be them, the two princes of, you know, the Austrian royal family. And it was a hilarious scene there. That was our quote from the beginning of the episode right after that. In the obviously is, super pissed at them. And, he's like, clearly you don't know who these gentlemen are. Like, these are the princes of the Austrian royal family. So I love how they just, kind of just zoomed off in the car earlier and, Indy falls off on the side of the road. And here he is, Captain Defense, talking to a lieutenant right here.
Which are both the two princes that are throughout the entire first half of the episode, which I love Prince Sixtus because he's very, very hilarious. Prince Xavier doesn't talk so much, but Prince Sixtus, he makes me laugh throughout the entire first half of the episode, honestly. Like, he's so laid back and so funny and relaxed, and meanwhile, Indy is very, very stern the entire first half of the episode.
Yeah, I agree. I really like the characterization of Sixtus, and the actor did a great job, I think, of giving this kind of an original spin on him, playing with his humor a little bit. I thought it was great that you had something a little bit more lighthearted, and we see that in one of these upcoming scenes here, which was great. And so we realize that Indy's not really sure what's going on here. And so Emperor Karl of Austria wishes to negotiate a peace settlement separate from Germany. And so that's kind of the main basis of what's going to be going on here. And Indy is going to escort them into Vienna, and they're going to meet secretly with the emperor to secure certain concessions from the government. So they're going to try to make their own separate agreement, which we see a lot later in the episode here. So we have this sort of diplomatic sort of agreement going on. There's a lot of dialogue here, lots of conversations and history sort of going on. So a little bit different if, you were looking for maybe an action story. That's kind of what you got, with the last episode here. You've got a little more history here going on and some interesting dialogue and conversations here.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the dialogue, especially in this episode, is very, very, what's the word I'm looking for? Pristine, it's very, very particular and very, very detailed. Like, even when they're negotiating, as you'll see a bit later in the episode, it's so detailed that basically the 5 minutes of dialogue is basically an entire section of history.
Literally, yeah. And credit here to Frank Darabont, who is probably the most famous writer that worked on this show. He wrote and directed The Shawshank Redemption just a few years after doing Young Indy. He wrote some of my favorite episodes in the show, Phantom Train to Doom, Oganga. I think he also did Travels with Father as well. And he's here again for Austria 1917, just the first half here. And again, the dialogue here, he was the one who incorporated the two Star Wars quotes, which you'll hear throughout. And just like you said, I mean, focusing on the history, we talked a lot about Noganga. That last conversation with Albert Schweitzer about the reverence for life was so well done. And Max, you bring up a great point here. This, you basically are learning about an entire section of history through this 5 minute dialogue conversation later with the Count and the Emperor and Emperor Karl. So I completely agree in that respect that this was well done in that respect. And one thing I wanted to mention about this, which is kind of hilarious and brought back some memories of Last Crusade here, is he mentions, we're going to put an end to this war with the strike of a pen. And it reminded me of the quote, the pen is mightier than the sword, which is what Indy's father says in Last Crusade. I don't know if that was maybe a specific hint at that, but I definitely was reminded of that when listening to this here.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. I am reminded of that. And, something, we move on here to where Indy is on the train with the prince, with the two princes. And I love this scene here mainly because Indy is there very, very serious, and they're both telling Indy to lighten up. And, they show Indy this note that they got, and Indy just burns it. They're basically appalled that Indy would burn something that the Prince of Austria would give them, right? But then, Indy tells them that if they were caught at the border with that they would get taken and it wouldn't be too good for them.
Yeah, I agree. This whole sort of train sequence here is hilarious. We see, Indy kind of roll his eyes at the beginning there when they're just talking and laughing. And I love how he just whistles and he's like, you know what? Let's get one thing straight. This is pretty serious business. We're not here on holiday. And immediately, like you said, we see Indy kind of being stern here. Obviously, he's got to come through on this assignment. After, what happened in the last episode here. And we see this whole sort of idea. And he also references what I thought was cool, some of the other episodes, like he's been to Congo, Verdun. He also mentions Flanders, which we may have talked about before, was supposedly one of the later episodes that George Lucas was intending on making for the show, had it not been canceled back in 1993, which I thought was really awesome. So Flanders was mentioned as well. And like you said, they show him the letter. And he burns it because he's like, we can't have any evidence of this going on if we get stopped at the border at all. So again, kind of an interesting dynamic here between these princes and Indy, especially I think we know that Indy's a little bit mad at them and still kind of salty that, you know, they just ran through the car and just threw him off the road on the bike from earlier.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's definitely holding a grudge here. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, literally.
I mean, you know, like, he would probably be a lot more... Like, if you notice Indy in the last episodes, yeah, he's a bit stern, but he also... figures out a way to lighten up the mood. Like, for example, in Oganga, he points a gun at his superior officer's head. I would consider that not being so much uptight as standing up. Like, here, he's like, these prints cannot stand up for me, I'm in charge, blah, blah, blah. So I guess Indy was put in the major's position, you know?
Yeah, and that's
reversing the roles.
Right, exactly. So in that sort of respect, yeah, I mean, we often see Indy as kind of being the guy who is, you know, I guess a little bit more lighthearted, or he's going to be in the adventure. We see that in so many of these episodes. And like you said here, the roles kind of reverse here, where Indy's kind of at least in charge in just this first half. We see that obviously change throughout the episode. And one thing I did want to mention, you talk about Indy. I thought the way Indy, at least how the story revolved around him, was a lot different than some of these other episodes. We do see Indy have his, of course, Harrison Ford-esque moments throughout the episode, but there's also a lot of Indy just kind of being involved in here. I mean, we do see a lot of, you know, time, especially with Emperor Carl and Sixtus and the Count later. There's a lot of dialogue between them. Indy's just kind of sitting there and listening. So interesting kind of the way Indy sort of has a different role in this episode, which I think goes to what you were saying. And that transitions here into this next scene, which is very, very interesting. We have the checkpoint here at the Austrian border. And I just wanted to start off by saying the cinematography here is awesome. The lighting and the shading. I mean, you have this, especially what goes with the costumes so well. I mean, their attire, you know, those hats and those nice suits that they have on, all three of them. And, you know, meanwhile, we see this whole sort of kind of huge train with the whistle and just a really cool set that gives you that dark feel that they're crossing the border. I mean, you got that just from watching this.
Oh, yeah. And speaking of dark set, it's nighttime when they actually pull into the border where they have to get... Something I found interesting is this, I don't know if this is the way it was in the war, but when they're crossing from, like, an allied territory to the other territory, so, for example, if they were crossing from Austria to wherever, French, like, those are two opposing territories, you know, they're technically fighting each other, so they have the, everybody has to get off the train before the border, go through border patrol, and get back on the train, which is something I found really, really interesting.
Right, exactly. So that was kind of cool, I think, that we did see that. We saw the train, you know, everyone had to be let off, then the train would move up. So you have this whole, like, dark scene here, especially, I love the way this was shot, too. You see this huge crowd scene here, just really, really cool. You get that suspense, the train, you know, I mean, this is a very dark scene here. And it's very intense, as, of course, they check their papers and... you know, we see these crowd seats. Everyone's got this this hat on. I love that the costumes are, you know, definitely represent that time period, which is really cool. And we see that something is wrong with the papers that Sixtus has. And they ask, are these your papers? And he's like, of course these are my papers. And right then and there, he gets taken away and something is wrong. And there's kind of an interesting dynamic here as well, as obviously, you know, Xavier obviously is not just going to let his brother run off, but Indy realizes they got to get right on the train and get out of there.
So yeah, he gets taken and he's, you know, he's like, I'm not losing my brother. And they get, Indy's like, sorry, we got to get right back on the train. So they get right back on, go to their cubicle. And, you know, he's very sad that he gets taken. And he's like, Indy, he's like, I'm sorry, but we have to get this through to Austria. We don't have any other chance. And all of a sudden, the other prince shows right back up. He's like, hello, guys. And, you know, they all are happy to see him. And they're like, how did you get back on?
Right, and so the interesting thing is apparently he just got mistaken for someone else, and, you know, Sixtus comes right back, and it's kind of an interesting scene here, as we have, you know, the obviously suspense of him being taken and the mission kind of being compromised almost right then and there, and then Sixtus, you know, comes right back as he was mistaken for someone else. And one thing I wanted to mention that was kind of cool here, Indy is wondering, wait a second, why arrest us at the border? What if they shadowed, you know, what if they're shadowing us into... you know, where we're going, and they're going to be following us this whole time, which is something we see a little bit later in the episode here. So Indy kind of has that, you know, idea right at the beginning. So a little bit of a, obviously, we got Sixtus back, that was great, but Indy realizes that maybe there's a little bit more behind this than they really could realize. So that was kind of interesting. And we see this next scene here in which this lady comes in, and it's kind of awkward, obviously, because they're all three of them are talking about very confidential business. And she comes in and, you know, sits down and, there's this next scene in which also they take the brothers' tickets, And Indy wonders what's happening. So he goes and asks the conductor kind of down the hall on the train there.
Right. He asks them and he's like, oh, I must have mistaken you for someone else, and just gives them the tickets back. Like, that's really weird, right? That's not something that really happens on trains unless it's a train where they take your tickets, like, specifically as you're on the train. And so, you know, we find that kind of weird. And Indy actually is going back and he's on the wrong car. So he stumbles into the wrong compartment with this... it's this old man, and you know, he's just standing there, and, you know, he's looking around, and the guy reaches in his jacket, and he thinks he's probably pulling out a gun or something, and as they go in the tunnel, Indy, like, beats the crap out of the guy, like, what did you do with them? And he's like, I just wanted to offer you a cigar, and Indy realizes he's in the wrong compartment, and yeah. I found that scene really, really hilarious, because he's like... Indy just is so paranoid that he stumbles into the wrong compartments and beat the crap out of some random guy on the train.
Right, and also going back to the cinematography here, of course, they have to be going under the bridge right when that happens.
Yes.
So, of course, it gets really dark and we see that guy, and he looks suspicious right at the beginning. I mean, no doubt. I see where Indy's coming from there. And then I love how we see the scene after that where he realizes it's the wrong compartment. And there's the scene of the window and the prince is, you know, sitting on the side. And Indy's head just, you know, he just dashes inside the cart. And he's like, what happened to you? And he's like, there was some mix-up about being in the wrong compartment, which I thought was hilarious. So, yeah, Indy just stumbles right in. And so, you know, this interesting point you bring up about kind of how that was a little bit of an awkward scene. Like, I found it interesting that that was even, like, part of the story. Because at first you think it has something to do with, obviously, them being shadowed or, you know, getting into, you know, trying to meet Emperor Carl. But it really doesn't, actually. It's just kind of, I guess, maybe some sort of comic relief they wanted to add or something. But it wasn't really actually really that important to the story at all in the end, which I guess was fine. I mean, it's a cool scene, but kind of interesting there as well.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, something I wanted to mention is that old lady on the train, right? They're getting off and they're looking for, Mr. Max or someone, or their contact in Austria, right?
Right. So I think Frau Schultz was the contact, actually, which was the lady on the train, of course. And now they're going to get their papers and new disguises. And they are three young Austrian princes. And what I love here is... Sixtus uses the quote back on Indy that we said at the beginning of the episode,
yes.
Which was just hilarious. I love that that happened. You know, hey, Second Lieutenant, I expect to be fully saluted. And, you know, it was great, hilarious there. And that's when you really kind of feel, you know, the personality of Sixtus. And you got to love that actor just for giving us that sort of, you know, idea of, you know, this just being, you know, giving a little bit more of a lighthearted tone here, which is awesome. And that transitions to the next scene in which... Indian, you know, the princes get in this car, and we have this great shot, by the way, of wherever this small sort of town is, and they're in the car, and they have to meet their next contact, which is they're going to make contact with there as well, as they're supposed to say that they're friends of Frederick.
Yes, definitely. They are supposed to say they are friends with Frederick, but they find out that Frederick is actually dead when they are at this bar with Mr. Max, I believe his name is.
Right, and so we see the scene in which the secret police have already arrived. They were supposed to enter this sort of building in which they were going to meet Frederick there. And we realize that Frederick is actually dead. And we see the car drive off as, you know, they start to leave, and this guy just jumps in. And, you know, at first we're like, who is this? And we realize it's Mr. Max, who is the, of course, the other contact that they're going to meet as well. And I love that scene right there when, especially when Frau Schultz back then said, you'll need these. And she gives, you know, this bag of what happens to be pastries. And so as they're driving off, you know, he's holding him at gunpoint and he's like, what's this? And just opens up the bag, grabs the pastries and like, these are yummy, and starts just eating them. It's hilarious.
Right. Just like Indy said. And, you know, they get to the bar where Mr. Max is, you know, going over to the payphone. I don't know who he's calling on the payphone, but something does not seem right at this bar.
Right, and so immediately we kind of suspect that Mr. Max obviously has to be, you know, something's not right here. You know, is he actually the contact? You know, because he knows so much about them. And that's what Sixtus says. He's like, he knows so much about us. Like, why? What's going on here? And what I like here is we will lead to this sort of section later, but there's kind of this sort of false implication here. that they're going to be taken. The mission has been compromised. They've been shadowed this whole time as we think Mr. Max is evil. And we get introduced right away to this old guy. I don't think we ever really learn who he actually is, but he has this top hat and this monocle. And we see him in various spots throughout the episode. And we see him there also at this restaurant or bar or whatever. And, you know, some of his henchmen, I guess you could say, come in and take Indy and the princes away. And we see that in the next scene when they're in the car there.
Yes, we do. We see them take them away, and they actually drive them, like, they're like, oh, Indy says, I got a bad feeling about this.
Right, which is the one Star Wars quote. Yeah, that was awesome.
Right, and, you know, they actually, he's like, as he checks the door, it's locked. As soon as they get to the palace, he's like, we'll jump out and make a run for it. Which doesn't end too well, as you see. They jump out and they're surrounded.
Right, so they're surrounded by all these soldiers, and a great shot there, too, as you have this circle of guys, and Indy and the princes just in the middle, the car's there, and they get taken to what seems to be this, like, dungeon, basically, as, you know, there's this huge door. They go down this long tunnel here, and it opens up to this huge, elegant room, which is just amazing, and just the set design here. I mean, oh my gosh, you are transported back to 1917 here. I mean, you have this, you know, elegant room, and we see actually that this was their way of actually meeting Emperor Karl, and actually Mr. Max was on their side the whole time, and so Emperor Karl's here safe and sound, and they're ready to negotiate the peace agreement. So I love this scene here where we have this sort of false implication that something's gone wrong, but this is actually kind of all part of the plan the whole time.
Right, you know, they're there, and they are very grateful for Indy for getting there too. I'm curious, are the princes their son, or are they just family of them?
I think they're just I actually don't know. I think I don't know much about the history of this, but I think they are just like part of extended family. I don't think that they actually are like his sons or anything. But they definitely are family for sure, as these are the princes of the Austrian royal family. They may be. I have no clue though.
Well, no, they're not his sons, because if you remember, his sons are, you see in the next scene after they try to negotiate, are outside.
Yeah, he has some little
wives.
Kids there, right.
Yeah. So, unless these are his older grown sons, but I don't think he is. Which, so, that's very interesting, you know, how the extended family kind of, if you're in the royal family, every part of it is involved, I guess you could say.
Right, exactly. And I love that quote there, where especially Emperor Karl here, he's like, in this like low, deep voice, like, who is this third man? Which is one of the references to the movie The Third Man by Orson Welles. And, you know, he's like, this is Captain Henri de France, you know, if it wasn't for him, we would not be alive right now. And so, you know, of course, Indy's like, oh, yay, you know, I'm getting recognized by the Emperor Karl of Austria right now. And so that was great. And again, you see these great shots of this room. I mean, you feel like, you know, you're transported back to this time. I mean, this room in the dungeon, I mean, it's so cool. Like, you're going down through this whole thing and you see this, you know, open up into this elegant room, which was just so awesome. I love it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that room, just especially the chandeliers and the table and the chairs, just this, it's also authentic from that time period and like for what the Emperor of Austria would have or the Emperor of whatever, you know, country would have. It's so authentic, especially the chair with, you know, the carved wood. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, definitely. And we transition here to we meet the Count here, who is actually played by the one and only Christopher Lee, who you probably recognize as, of course, the infamous villain from Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, James Bond. I think he also maybe was Dracula in an old movie from the 50s or 60s. I can't remember. And he gets his appearance here in, of course, the one and only Indiana Jones franchise. Not as a villain, though, but it's still kind of cool we get his appearance here. And so we transition into this huge dialogue scene, basically, here that goes on for about 5 minutes between the Emperor, the Count, and there's a lot of moving parts here, a lot of history and stuff. And so basically the point is they're trying to figure out, you know, how can we have this sort of diplomatic peace agreement. And so the Emperor has three concessions that he wants to make in a very specific letter. And these are that Austria must support the French claim to Alsace-Lorraine. The second one is that Austria recognizes Belgian sovereignty and move German troops out of Belgium. And the third one is that we must grant Serbian sovereignty. So those were like the three main points that they wanted to draft in the letter. And we see here how there's this whole idea of drafting like the perfect letter. And they want to be very specific in these claims, as this is a pretty important moment as they might be able to end the war. And we see here how they want to do this kind of with diplomacy. Their whole idea is diplomacy is kind of what got us in this whole mess of the war. And so although this seems like the good idea, the Count is a little bit worried that not many people would agree with this, specifically the Kaiser, who is the person that they're going to be writing the letter to. He thinks that he would disagree, and France and Germany supposedly would be involved in this. So there's a lot of moving parts here in terms of like the history here that you can really pick out, and it's definitely a very cool scene as we really get to learn about like what is it that Indy's actually kind of being involved in.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Indy, you know, there's not much dialogue actually from Indy in this scene. It's mainly the prince, the count, and the emperor. Indy's kind of just there. I mean, again, he was only there as an escort, but he gets so involved in this that it's so interesting.
Yeah, that's a great point you bring up. Like, Indy has no lines in this at all. Like, basically for like a solid, you know, 5 minutes here at all, no lines. He's just observing. I mean, you forget Indy's even there. I mean, you know, it's basically the Count and the Emperor talking about this. And so that's, I think, what was a really cool part of it. And one thing I did want to mention about this, for any Star Wars fans out there, of course, at this point in time when the show was made, Christopher Lee hadn't been in the Star Wars prequels yet. However, I think just on a sheer coincidence, actually, he says a few words that are like, quote-unquote, Star Wars vocabulary. I wrote them down. In a matter of about 1 minute, he says Empire, Betrayal, Treason, Imperial, which are all like Star Wars words, which I found to be hilarious. And of course, I don't think it was a reference at all. It was just a sheer coincidence. But I found that kind of funny, especially because they're talking about like diplomatic relations and stuff. All those words came up, which are like huge Star Wars words from any Sith Lord. So I thought that was kind of funny there as well.
Yeah, that is. Now, you know, so they're talking for 5 minutes and the Count finally said, you know what, I'll see what I can do. And, you know, so that's the end of their meeting for today.
Right, and one more thing I wanted to mention, actually, which was kind of interesting here, is the Emperor Karl mentioned something that I thought was kind of an interesting point. He says he doesn't want to be the last emperor and let this thousand-year monarchy collapse. And he's worried that the war is going to do that. And that this sort of whole Austrian royal family will no longer exist. And so that was one thing I thought that was kind of interesting, sort of his own personal ideas of why does he want to draft this letter to the Kaiser. And so that was kind of interesting as well that you say there. And like you said, I think there's a lot of moving parts to this dialogue. And we see the next day, the Count actually comes back and Sixtus is very upset.
Oh, yes. He's very, very upset. You know, he's like, we've got to get this done because the Count says, I cannot be any more explicit than that because the letter he returns with is very, very vague. And, you know, he says, we have to be more explicit. And the Count's like, I'm sorry, I cannot be more explicit. And, you know, he ends up signing it and returning it to the prince, which is very, very interesting.
Yeah, and one thing I thought was cool here is as well is you clearly have, I mean, this whole idea of, we talked about like crafting the right letter, and we see this a little bit later too, is, you know, the Count doesn't want to be too explicit because the Kaiser might discover what they're up to, right? Because they're clearly trying to do very specific things. We saw those with Emperor Karl's three sort of specific concessions that he had. And the Count doesn't want to be that specific, but Sixtus obviously wants to just send a letter over with those three concessions and be very explicit about it. So it's the idea that those sort of three moving parts could be very controversial in the end of this war here. So that was something I thought that was interesting too. And we see that the Emperor Karl has to make this very, you know, kind of hard choice. What, does he sign the letter or not? And that whole sort of thing. And so the Emperor is clearly very concerned here and actually drafts another letter. And as they're heading back to Austria, gives it to Indy secretly, which actually has all three of the concessions listed explicitly, which I thought was really kind of a cool scene there.
Right. So, you know, he goes behind the Count's back, drafts the letter, and kind of signs it, which I think is really, really interesting.
Yeah, especially, I love that scene, too, where he, like, embraces Indy in a huge hug. They've known each other for, like, 24 hours to, you know, secretly give him the letter. That was great, a scene as well.
Right, and if you actually look, the Count gives, he gives the Emperor a weird look, like, what did you just do? Because, you know, he's acting very suspiciously. He doesn't hug part of his family, but yet he hugs some guy, you know, that he's only known for, what, 24 hours, 48 hours, something like that?
Right, exactly. So, obviously, there's a little bit of suspicion there. And so, you know, they're back in the car, and, you know, Sixtus just basically is, you know, completely upset. And I love this scene here. Indy's just driving off, having the time of his life, pulls out the letter, shows it to him, and Sixtus basically screams and is like, yes, we got the letter that we wanted. So a great scene there, again, going with sort of his character that we were talking about earlier. Great scene there.
Well, all good things must come to an end, and they go back to get their papers and disguises from Mr. Max, and they find that he is dead, which is very sad, but, you know, they find that he is dead, and they turn around to leave, right? And there's this guy with a gun who's about to shoot him, and they get into kind of a brawl, almost.
Yeah, and again, going back to the cinematography here, we have this very... I love that scene right when they come out of the car before they enter the apartment. There's, you know, that light and the shading of just the car and the scene and, you know, kind of the European street at night is awesome. And like you say, we also get a little bit of a glimpse from the guy with the top hat and the monocle again. As, of course, like you said, this guy comes. They basically get into this huge brawl fight as, of course, he starts shooting at him. And they basically run up to the roof as Indy, you know, tackles him and just jumps right on him. And I love this great scene here, which actually I watched an interview that was included on one of the VHS tapes with Sean Patrick Flannery. And he said that one of his favorite stunts was actually this scene in which he had to hang by his fingertips on the top of the staircase. Because we see that scene when he gets thrown over right then and there. I mean, that's an Indiana Jones-esque style right there. I mean, just, you know, hanging by his fingertips, you know, falling off the staircase there, and then, you know, Prince Sixtus and Xavier just pull him up right there. That was a really awesome scene.
Kind of reminds me of the Raiders scene where Indy, you know, grabs onto this vine and it just starts pulling up and down. Pulling down as Indy is trying to grasp on, and he finally grabs onto to his whip and gets up there, which I find is very, very interesting.
Yeah, definitely. A lot like that. And I also love this great scene kind of as well as you have this kind of like rooftop chase, basically, that happens in the night. And, you know, you have Indy and the princes, you know, running all the way down and the guy shooting at him behind him, which leads to a street chase. And I love how you can see their shadows sort of on the wall there, which I thought was really kind of clever. And I like that a lot.
Yeah, it is very, very cool. I mean, especially when they're going up the staircase and on the roof and just jumping onto all these different roofs, the shadows are so super duper cool. They must have had to get the right lighting just for that.
Yeah, definitely. They look super cool and they add the suspense of it. You know, I mean, there's this whole sort of climactic chase going on and they have those shadows, which was awesome.
Right, and so they end up jumping off the roof when they are out of roof, and they're running through what looks kind of like this palace archway. They run through into this kind of main courtyard area, but they're gone. They've just mysteriously vanished, which is very, very interesting because we don't even see what happens to them. We just see the old guy looking around.
Right, and we see this little scene here, and there's just like this kind of cage, I guess, there, and I think they're hiding in there, and... there's this, you know, whole sort of scene in which they just kind of vanish from thin air. And of course, we see the guy with the monocle still kind of thinking that maybe he's the secret police or something and kind of catching on to what they're doing. And that transitions into, of course, the next scene when we just see the train. And Indy had the pleasant idea of hiding in the sewer. And this is when the second Star Wars quote appears. What an incredible smell you've discovered, which is a great quote from Star Wars A New Hope and the trash compactor scene that was yet again thrown into this one here. And that was awesome. I love how they have that sort of idea. And we see now, though, that they don't have their papers or their disguises. So they're now on the train getting ready to cross the border, and that may not actually work. So they're kind of in a bind here, and Indy's going to think of something. And we transfer to the next scene where, of course, the train stops at a station. And basically, the guy with the monocle and the top hat and, you know, all his henchmen of the secret police were basically on their tail the whole time and actually get on the train to start looking for them.
Yes, they do. They get on the train. Do they get on the train at the border, or do they get on the train right when Indy and the two princes get on?
Well, the interesting thing is there's like a station, I think, in between. So actually... what seems to be the border actually just seems to be some station, and all of them get on there. And so during that entire ride, as they're getting to the border, they're looking through the entire train to find them, which I thought was kind of cool.
Oh, yeah, I do find that interesting. And I remember that Indy and the two princes, don't they hide in the bathroom
right,
from them?
Right, yeah.
Which I find is very interesting. You know, they bang on the door and say, come on, open up. And I love how the two princes are two women. Like, they pretend with really high voices to be two women saying, excuse me, I'm in here, kind of.
Right, exactly. It's hilarious. Again, going back to that sort of comic relief aspect. And, of course, you know, I love, too, when... right before when Indy comes through, they open the door to that, you know, sort of dining car area. And Indy's eyes just, you know, like, get super wide as he notices that they're right there. And they all just, like, rush into the small sort of restroom there and, you know, just hide in there, which is a hilarious scene as well. And so they come up with this basically idea to kind of lead them into a trap as Indy just walks in the dining car and finds them and has to run all the way down to this end scene, which the princes are kind of going to have this sneak attack here going.
Right. I mean, Indy runs into the engine room and the two guys run after him, but the two princes are hiding and they both knock him over the head and knock them out and take their two disguises so that they can get through the border basically without getting detected that they're not, you know, supposed to be there.
Right. Exactly. So they have their papers, their uniforms and all that sort of stuff. And that's when kind of you have this idea of, you know, the whole sort of espionage Secret Service thing, right? Indian is trying to kind of figure this all out and get it put together. So I also like as well, too, how, especially when you have that scene earlier from the letter, everything seemed like it was kind of wrapping up. You're like, oh, that's the episode. Indy's going to, you know, deliver the letter and, you know, that's that. And then you have this whole, you know, rooftop chase scene. You've got this, you know, sort of train sequence here, and then the actual climactic scene, which we're going to lead to now, in which Indy tries to get off the train here. Sixtus and Xavier take the disguises and get off the train themselves, but Indy is left behind.
Right. So he gets onto the roof as the train is pulling through the border, and he stops just short of the border, right? And so they tell them to reverse the train, and Indy starts taking off for his life across the top of the train as the men, the henchmen, and the guy in the monocle are shooting through the roof at him.
Right, and of course you have the great climactic scene with the main young Indy theme playing, as you have Indy running across the top. And I love the scene right there when he jumps right onto that top bar there and swings right across to just barely hop over the fence. If that's not an Indy move, I don't know what is. That was a classic there as he runs across the top. I also love the scene when they actually reveal that he's on the top of the train and just like laying there, stand still. So that was an awesome scene that I loved, especially too, right after when the guy with the monocle tips his hat to him as Indy gets across.
Yeah, I love that scene. You know, the guy in the monocle is kind of like, well, you did it. I'll catch you next time or whatever, you know. I mean, there's got to be something said for, you know, people, like, even though they're against each other, they've got to give him credit for his cleverness, you know.
Exactly, yeah. That whole sort of thing, I think, was displayed well here. So Indy gets his next assignment here as we find out that, unfortunately, the Kaiser didn't approve the letter and didn't actually work in the end. So another failure de France, as he says, and he's like, well, why don't you go to Petrograd and work in the Balkan News Agency, which is where he goes now. And we learn that he's going to go to the kind of French embassy as a translator here. And there's this whole Russian revolution going on as the sort of government has kind of changed in Russia during this whole time in the war. And there's this group of Bolsheviks who are trying to kind of change the sort of government and political views there. So Indy's kind of going to learn more about that as a translator.
We transitioned into these beautiful shots of Russia, and Indy, you know, he's going to work at the undercover at the Balkan News Agency, and he meets, you know, this guy who's in there, you know, he's there. It's basically this huge room that's lined kind of with these card catalogs full of files and these two typewriters. And I love the other guy who works at this newsroom. He's kind of hilarious. Like, he's very, very stern, and yet Indy is the one who's lightened up now. It's all of a sudden that they've reversed roles from the first half of the episode, almost.
Yeah, almost, yeah. Like, that's kind of funny. Like, Indy is now kind of Sixtus a little bit, and I think his name is Brossard or something. He's the other guy in the news agency. Kind of turns out to be Indy, I guess you could say. So, yeah, kind of like that there, and Indy kind of learns that you know, he kind of gets this whole, like, background on sort of what's going on in terms of the government's situation in Russia. And so meanwhile, while he's here, he befriends this whole group of, you know, young kind of Bolsheviks who are kind of the same age as him. And they all just live together, I guess, in this, you know, whole sort of really cool house, which we'll talk about a little later. And so anyway, so obviously Indy, his mission is to kind of learn more about the Bolshevik Revolution. And so his job is clearly confidential, yet he kind of tries to side with all his friends a little bit because they actually kind of want to change the government and sort of the political rule of Russia. So it's a very interesting kind of tension here, as Indy, of course, has his job and then runs off to try to get tell Sergei and Irina, who we get introduced to here, to not actually go march.
Right. I mean, you know, he's telling them not to march, and, you know, it doesn't really work too well, they end up not going to march that night, but they end up going to meet at this bar where everybody is dancing and singing to this music, which I think is a really cool scene.
Yeah, they go to this, I think they call it the Dancing Bear or whatever. It's just this local place, I guess, this restaurant or whatever. You know, everyone's having the time of their lives dancing, and, you know, there's, you know, lots of music playing. And so we see this first sort of style. And one thing I wanted to mention about this is I love the feel of this episode, especially the Petrograd half here, which we get introduced to just kind of off the start here. Is I like this whole idea of Indy kind of being with, you know, a bunch of other people his age, and I'm not really sure how to describe it, I guess, but I like the different style and feel of this episode. It feels kind of like Indy's not as independent in this one. He's more kind of with everyone else and kind of observing everything. And I like that style change in his character because I think it adds something new that we haven't really seen yet.
Yeah, definitely. It really does add something different. You know, we don't see, he's really trying to fit in with his friends, but he's also, you know, he has to stay to his mission while also, you know, not letting his friends know what happened, and kind of trying to side with his friends. So it kind of brings up a very interesting dilemma here. And something I also wanted to mention, they're at this place where everybody is singing and dancing, and yet Indy is just sitting in the back there with them. It's kind of interesting how they're not all singing and dancing together.
Yeah, so he meets his friends here, who we get introduced to, who are Rosa and then Sergei, who we saw earlier, of course. And I love this whole sort of scene here. We have a lot of these in which Indy kind of talks with them about what's going on in Russia, and it's kind of interesting as we see that. And what I like about this is, again, you have this idea of Indy and his job versus what all of his friends are thinking. So kind of interesting dynamic there as well. And I like as well, too, how you have Indy brings them the bread and butter, which I thought was great as well, because, of course, you know, materials were scarce back then in World War I. So that was cool as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, materials were very scarce, and, you know, we transitioned to Indy actually having to, you know, go back to the news agency at night, right? And I love the guy he's still there, and he's like, oh, putting in some extra time, Indy? And he's like, do you ever go home?
He asks,
like whenever Indy is there, he's always there. And it's like, do you ever leave this place?
Right. And that was funny.
I was laughing super hard when he said that because, you know, from up until now, you know, Indy hasn't really been too funny. Like he, you know, he's more upbeat than he was in the first half of the episode. But then this guy's just like, do you ever go home?
Right. You know, exactly.
He's always there doing something.
Yeah, it's hilarious. Really, and I love the scene, too, right before that. I mean, when you see him running in the dark, right, in Petrograd with all these huge buildings around. I mean, and then you transition into the cool set of the news agency with, like you said, the card catalogs and files, you know, everywhere. Just a great scene. And like you said, Indy's hilarious in this, as, you know, he kind of has this idea. And he learns about kind of like how the provisional government gets to hold the elections and how that might change what actually happens. Because we learn a little bit later about Vladimir Lenin, who was a very famous historical figure and is actually introduced in this episode a little bit, which is cool. And I like how, again, you have the news agency being part of this. And like you said, that other character is hilarious. I mean, you know, Indy obviously is kind of making fun of him a little bit and, you know, having a good time with it. So that was great as well.
So we transition to him back at the house with Rosa and Irina, and they're talking about how Rosa, you know, really has this kind of deep crush on Indy. And, you know, Indy's, meanwhile, he's playing chess with Sergei, which and, you know, he's like, check, and then checkmate. And, you know, he references, I can't remember what he references. I think he references something in the revolution relating to chess, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think you are right. I did kind of get that sort of little hint there in the episode, which was kind of cool. And Speaking of the house, I love this house. We cannot not talk about this. I mean, that's so cool. Like, this huge sort of, I mean, the tall sort of ceilings. I mean, this huge, like, open room where all of them are staying. I mean, it's a really cool set in there. Or hopefully, it may be a real building, actually. I mean, I have no idea. But it was super cool in there. I mean, you have this whole sort of, the architecture inside of it and the interior design was super cool. And so we see this whole sort of relationship start to develop between Rosa and Indy. And, you know, she asks him if he wants to go to this performance where they're going to see the Mozart clarinet concerto. And he's like, of course, you know, I'll go with you. And so we see this next sort of scene here, which I thought was very interesting because we have this great piece of music that plays, by the way, which we'll talk about in our score review next week. And we see this, you know, that the concert was canceled because... the musicians were actually called to entertain the troops at the front. And so we get to kind of go around and see the magnificent bridges of St. Petersburg, which are the real bridges that are in St. Petersburg. It was shot on location there. And this dialogue here, I mean, with Indy and Rosa, as you know, they're walking around, you know, all this magnificent architecture. Really great scene that I loved here, as Indy talks a little bit about his past and stuff.
Yeah, he does. He mentions, you know, how his mother died a few years ago, and that another thing I love is that how he mentions if he ever went back, his father would probably kill him.
Right, exactly. So this whole, you know, tension with his father, too, I thought was, you know, it gets mentioned a few times throughout the episodes as well, yeah.
Right, and he also mentions it's his birthday. You know, Rosa is kind of like, oh, it's your birthday? I didn't know. You know, happy birthday. And he's like, oh, it's not that big of a deal, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, as we see... later, you know, Rosa is keeping Indy away from the apartment because it's his birthday. You know, they're all planning a surprise party for Indy, which is really, really cool. And, you know, as they're on the bridges for St. Petersburg, something I wanted to mention, they're over the kind of river that runs through the city. And I kind of wanted to mention, it looks a lot like kind of what Venice, Italy looks like.
Yeah, it does. I did kind of get that vibe, too, that, you know, you did have kind of like an Italy feel here, which was kind of cool. I loved seeing the shots there of them just walking around. And especially, too, like, we haven't really gotten introduced to Rosa that much. I mean, of course, there were, like, two scenes with her prior to this. But we really kind of get to learn about, you know, it really just kind of jumps in to Indy's lifestyle here. Whereas some of these other ones, you know, we get introduced to the princes, right? He gets his assignment. You know, he meets, you know, all the contacts, you know, in chronological order. Here, this just kind of jumps in. Indy's already kind of been here for a while. He's worked with the Balkan News Agency, right? He's already known Rosa for a while. So that I thought was interesting because it brought a new perspective, I think, to those three characters, you know, Sergei and Irina as well.
Yeah, definitely it did. And, you know, so they end up back at the apartment and they all yell, surprise, and they're all laughing and dancing after, you know, Indy had no idea that this party was planned for him.
Yeah, I love this great scene here. You know, they're all having the time of their lives. And I love how Indy takes his fedora off and puts it on Rosa. I thought that was funny. You know, as obviously, you know, she was distracting him the whole time. And so they have this great party. And transitioning into probably what may be my favorite scene from this episode, which is a great parallel between the idea of capitalism, socialism, and communism compared to Indy's cake. And so we see that here as we have this great scene where they all talk about it, you know, jokingly, as, you know, that kind of ties into this episode and these ideas, right? And so Indy's like, you know, if you were a capitalist, you get the big slice, you know, because it's your birthday. And then so some of them also mentioned if you were the workers, you get the small bit. And so they talk about, you know, if you're socialist, there's a fair share of it. And then they talk about communism, which is kind of what's, you know, going on with the Bolsheviks and all that. Everyone, you know, gets their equal slice. And then we see one of the guys, I think his name was Boris.
Yeah, I believe
he
so.
Says, this is anarchism in practice, and just grabs one of the, you know, slices of the cake and just runs off. Hilarious.
Yeah, I think he grabs almost 1/4 or 1/2 of the cake. It's hilarious, and they all start laughing and joking, you know. Just, I mean, Indy seems to be having the time of his life practically here.
Yeah, and one thing I wanted to mention too as well is this was kind of a mirror scene to that scene in Verdun with all the food there. I like that this was such a clever scene that I really enjoyed about this episode.
Oh yeah, definitely. And they, for Indy's birthday present here, they take him to see a revolution communist speech by Vladimir Lenin.
And there's, of course, this very interesting scene, as of course we have this whole speech, which I don't actually know if it was a real speech from Vladimir Lenin or if it was rather written for this episode specifically. Either way, it was still kind of interesting. Of course, he talks about sort of the capitalist profits, right? How he wants to stop the war, the idea of peace for soldiers and workers and peasants. And so he talks about all these sort of communist ideas as well. As, you know, you are getting, I think, a very sort of good representation of, you know, Vladimir Lenin and especially, you know, the Bolsheviks and what they are. We see this huge sort of crowd scene here, which is awesome, especially when we see Vladimir Lenin, you know, kind of up at this sort of podium and he's talking. And that was really cool as well, especially, I mean, this part of history, I think, is not something that I think is necessarily like super in you know, talked about in terms of World War One, and I think they did a great job in really diving into this on a very deep level, and especially Indy's role in this, I thought was interesting. The fact that he was, you know, working at the news agency, and, you know, he got to hear, you know, Vladimir Lenin speak, and so I like that they kind of shed some light on this sort of aspect of history and really kind of took a deep dive into that.
Yeah, and, you know, I definitely agree. This is a good part of history, and him being able to see that really adds to the authenticness of this, you know, episode, part of the episode. And, you know, they're walking home talking about the speech, and Indy realizes he has to go break into this printing press, right? Because about, which is about the revolution and the day of the revolution. He wants to find out when it is so he can stop it, because that's his whole entire mission, right? So, and, you know, Rosa asks, where do you have to go? And he's like, you know, I can't tell you that. Like, you know, kind of jokingly, like, you know, they always have an they have this agreement where they can't tell each other, you know, what they're doing, because obviously, you know, Indy's in the Secret Service. That's what he has to do.
Right. And so, again, going back to that whole main kind of theme of the episode where Indy's kind of conflicted with that. And I love how he runs through the streets there. There's that huge scene there as we have that huge building. I love that. And like you said, this cool factory here. And he sees this sort of newspaper ad, which kind of sheds some light on this event that's going to be taking place. But there's no date on it. So, you know, Indy's kind of interested, like, what's going on here? And so we see that, obviously, these security guards come in as Indy's, you know, not supposed to be in there. And so he hides. And, you know, they're like, there's no one here. And of course, has to lean back on the buttons that turn all the machines at the printing press. And, right. You know, everything starts going crazy and Indy starts running out. And again, kind of similar to that, like, rooftop chase scene with kind of how, you know, the dark and sort of eerie feel of it. As, you know, there's that scene where he jumps out the window and runs into the street. That awesome shot that I was talking about. Just, oh, love that scene as well. Super cool.
Right, and, you know, he runs back to where he is working, and is he pulls out the sheet that he was working on earlier, and I don't know if he's trying to decode something or what, but the sheet he pulls out, he's, you know, circling these random letters and numbers that are in Russian.
Right, and one thing I actually wanted to mention about that is, to me, that scene was really when you had the whole, like, Secret Service feel. Like, that was really kind of like, Indy's a secret agent, right? He's kind of learning about what's going on. He's kind of breaking into the factory and figuring it out. That was kind of the big moment where I think you feel like Indy's a secret agent in this episode. So I did like that as well. And like you said, yeah, he is kind of trying to figure out what's going on here and, you know, kind of this whole scene. And so that transitions then into this whole sort of idea when we see this relationship with Rosa and Indy that was kind of alluded to a little bit earlier. As Rosa tells Indy that she loves him. And so there's this whole, you know, powerful dialogue scene here as we obviously see that Indy doesn't feel the same way. And so there's that whole sort of scene, which I thought was very interesting as well.
Yeah, it is. You know, Indy, not Indy, Rosa confesses her love to him. And, you know, she's always saying how I know you don't feel the same way, blah, blah, blah. And Indy's like, well, I really do care about you, but I'm sorry, I don't love you. And, you know, he kind of boosts her confidence by saying, I'm sure you'll find someone, which I think is it's a very sweet, you know, kind of friendship, like greater than friendship, but less than, you know, relationship kind of moment, almost, you know, very, very powerful.
I agree with you. I think the fact that this was included in this episode, I thought was very interesting. You know, again, the dynamic of this, the character of Indiana Jones, I think, was definitely taken, you know, given an original sort of spin in this episode. So I did like they included that as well, especially, you know, to add to the whole, you know, character of Rosa and what we saw a little bit earlier. So that was really great. I like that. And that transitions into the next scene, or kind of the same scene here, but a different topic, with Sergei and Irina. And we learned how that there was going to be this the largest collection of industrial workers is at this one sort of big area. And so the whole point is that hopefully they can, you know, kind of join in on this effort to, you know, this effort of the Russian Revolution. So that's kind of the goal here. And so there's this idea of, you know, Sergey and Irina, and they're disagreeing with Indy, because Indy obviously has, you know, insider intel, right, that he can't tell anyone. But there's this whole different kind of perspective of Sergey and Irina, and they've lived here basically their whole life, right? They've had this whole plan, kind of, you know, this Bolshevik group that they're in. And so the idea of how that conflicts with Indy and what he knows, because remember, he was also given that assignment to try to figure out what was going on, right? We saw that kind of competition with him and Brossard back at the news agency. So that kind of comes into play here as well, as, you know, he tells them not to go to the steelworkers, right? And Sergey disagrees. And, you know, that whole sort of thing I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, and something I also wanted to mention is Rosa also comes down the staircase and says, friendship also isn't easy, which I think is, you know, very, very interesting. And, you know, it's just, it's really cool how, you know, Indy and Rosa are kind of like, they're almost like brother and sister in a way.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's kind of an interesting dynamic between those characters too, as I think you see that in the end of the episode too, as, you know, obviously they try to go stop Sergey and Irina as well. So I did like that that relationship was added. You know, I think it gave it a lot of depth in this episode, which was something that was needed, especially for something so history heavy. And I like that as well. And so India, of course, we transition to the next scene here, of course, when he's back at the French embassy. And, you know, so they're trying to figure out, okay, what have you figured out? And so, you know, Brossard makes his case, which, of course, Indy disagrees with. And he says that the Bolsheviks are dangerous, but they're also a little bit cautious. So they're not going to make their move yet, because they obviously need more people to join their sort of revolution. And that's when we also learn that, of course, Indy realizes that Vladimir Lenin has actually traveled to Finland. And so, of course, they confirm that that actually did happen. And he's like, congratulations, Captain Defonce. Maybe you have a job in the field here one day. And of course, you know, he's smiling, you know, having the time of his life, as of course, Brossard was wrong the whole time. And, you know, Indy tries to rub it in his face, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, definitely. I do like that. You know, they do rub it in his face. And we transition to this telephone room where Indy says, you know, that the revolution's not going to happen. And immediately right after that, you know, Indy is manning the phones, and they get a call that, you know, Lenin has returned and that the uprising has already started. And they all look at kind of at Indy like, oh, you were wrong, half wrong, because, you know, that's a big deal, because, I mean, that's kind of what Indy's entire mission was. He's almost kind of failed on another mission. You know, his mission was to stop the revolution, and yet here we are having another revolution.
Right. And so, I mean, this whole kind of idea, like, this is the turn of history, right? I mean, Lenin has returned, this uprising has started, which is what Indy was kind of trying to learn the whole time. And so we see that, of course, we this huge room with, you know, everyone kind of on phones and, you know, everyone kind of trying to piece together what's going on, and this whole sort of room with, which I thought was really cool, by the way, especially as Indy's kind of learning all this intel, and we see the ambassador and everything. And so then we realize that Sergey and Irina are starting this march, which we learned about a little bit earlier. And we actually realize that the Cossacks have this whole sort of street kind of on this top building, on like the main like street, I guess you could say. And they have it all lined with, you know, guns and everything. And they are going to actually shoot at the Bolsheviks. And so Indy, of course, obviously knows that Sergey and Irina are going there and tries to get them to stop. And so there's this huge scene, which has a lot of tension, as Indy is very persistent about it. We see, you know, them giving kind of this speech in this like small area, and this idea of kind of friendship and what Indy has learned. We see that tension here through that dialogue there, which I really liked.
Yeah, we definitely do, especially, you know, we do have all this tension, and Indy, you know, he returns and tells, you know, Rosa that, you know, Sergey and Irina have gone to join the revolution, and they both, you know, Rosa runs out, say, I've got to warn them, and Indy says, wait for me, as he yells at the window after her, and they both are going to run to try and warn them that they're going to, basically, all the streets are lined with shotguns and machine guns, and that they're going to get killed.
Right, so there's this whole sort of deep scene at the end here where Rosa and Indy run to the street with the march, and we hear them, you know, this whole sort of scene here where they're all saying their sort of speech. They have this whole, I guess, chant, you could say, that all of them are saying here, and we notice the guns, and it transitions into this very horrific and horrible scene in which, you know, obviously we see that you know, all of these sort of soldiers on the top here just sort of have absolutely no sort of, you know, I guess, nothing's holding them back. And they're just going to shoot at all of these people who are just protesting against, you know, their rights in Russia. And so it's this really kind of gruesome scene here, especially since we've obviously known about the characters of Sergei and Irina for a while here. And so we see this scene here in which, you know, Indy obviously is trying to shout to Sergei, you know, stop, stop. And then, of course, we see that Sergei gets shot right then and there, and everyone starts dispersing in different areas as Indy and Rosa quickly go to grab Sergei and drag him off to the side here as he got shot, you know, right in the chest there and actually dies quickly soon after. So a really horrible scene there.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, he should have listened to Indy, as we say, and that's kind of the end of this episode here, you know, a very horrific ending. And that's almost something I really didn't like about this episode, how they didn't end on a good note. They kind of ended with a very horrific, tragic scene.
Yeah, it was very interesting in terms of the way it has ended, especially with that last march there, of course, as we see Sergei and Irina and that last sort of scene there with all of them together. And then we see, I think, you know, one of them go into the middle of the street there and you know, kind of the camera kind of zooms in on that, and it fades to, of course, the famous black and white, and that ends Young Indiana Jones and the Adventures in the Secret Service. So what did we think of this episode?
You know, I had mixed feelings, really, about this episode. You know, in my opinion, I personally don't think it's one of my favorites. It's definitely not one of my favorites as compared to, you know, maybe Travels with Father or even the first episode. But I definitely think it still is a very well-structured episode, especially the first part where we are in Austria. You know, I don't particularly like the second part where we're in Russia, but I do think they definitely go well together, especially considering how, you know, there's not really a love interest in the first part where there is in a second part, and, you know, every Young Indy episode has to have a love interest, otherwise it's not a Young Indy episode.
Yeah, I would also agree with you as well. I felt that the ending was a little bit weird, and maybe it was because of the absence of the George Hall bookends, but still, even I feel like the rest of these episodes, even without the George Hall bookends, are fine. You know, they work well, kind of their own sort of episode. And yeah, I was a little bit disappointed. Of course, I get the idea of trying to represent sort of, you know, how serious this obviously was and, you know, what this, you know, event was in history. But I did agree that I felt like, especially coming off such a history-heavy topic, just ending it right then and there was a little bit of a disappointment for me. However, I did like this episode. I thought this was a really well-done episode, especially the first half. I thought it was really well done on all levels, on the writing and the dialogue, especially for that such of a historical topic. And then the characters as well, and sort of Indy's role in that sort of first half of the peace agreement there. And the second half in Petrograd, I thought was very interesting as well. These tension between Indy's job versus, you know, the views of the young Bolsheviks that he was kind of friends with. And so I like that as well. And I really am a fan of the style and the change of this episode, how different it is from all of the other episodes. That's one of my favorite things about the show, how it changes as well. So I would agree with you on some respects that I would say that if I was to rank these episodes or something like that, I feel like there are a lot of episodes that, at least for me personally on a personal level here, come a lot higher than this one. But nonetheless, I do not think this was a bad episode at all. This was really well done and still a fun one to watch as well. All right, and I think that about wraps up today's episode. So if you're new to the podcast and you enjoyed today's episode, consider subscribing to our podcast or leaving a review. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and many other podcast platforms. If you want to learn more about the podcast, you can visit our website at www.theindianajonesuniverse.com. We have all our podcast episodes listed there for your listening convenience, as well as a great links page if you want to learn more about the expanded universe of Indiana Jones. And finally, to stay up to date on news announcements and be part of the Indie community here, make sure to like us and follow us over on our Facebook page. You can find us there at the Indiana Jones Universe Podcast. So thanks again for joining us, and we'll be back soon with another episode.
Once again, I'm Max.
And I'm Will.
And until next time...
So long, Dr. Jones.